I'm aware of a couple of different places in Scripture where, at least by my reading and praying of the encounter, that Jesus is listening to another person and struggles with his response a bit, and then ultimately takes action that is greatly influenced by those people. And the two that stand out to me, particularly in that regard, are the wedding at Cana encounter with his mother, where he hears from her about the need for wine, and then his response to her. And the other is his encounter with the Syrophoenician woman, is that what we call it. And I love the fact that not only is there this interaction and dialogue where Jesus listens and responds, but according to a friend and scholar, biblical scholar, Judy Gundry Wolfe, basically she understands that passage as a pivot point in Jesus' own recognition of his mission, particularly to the Gentiles. And so if you read the scripture that way, you recognize that Jesus was willing to listen and to change his plans in response to the people around him, that he was willing to hear God in the other. And I start in that place because that's a lot about what Companions is about, but also because that's why I'm here tonight. I got the letter from Jennifer and Sally and Mary inviting me to come to speak, and I'm a procrastinator. I'm in a situation these days where I'm a little uncertain about how much energy I'm going to have, and I probably would have set the letter aside and maybe not done anything about it. And my husband walked into the room and he said, you know, what's that? What's happening? And he picked up the letter and he took a look at it and he said, of course you need to go. And he walked into his study and, using his United Miles, got me a ticket. And within, you know, 15 minutes of me reading the letter, I had a ticket to come to North Carolina. So I let these gals know that I had a ticket and that I was going to come. Well, events intervened, and both of my children got engaged, and I have some health issues, and I was really wondering whether this month was really going to work for me. And I was thinking, maybe I need to call them and tell them that this is just going to be too much for me physically. And while I was thinking those thoughts, the telephone rang right in the midst, kind of praying about that with God and thinking, I'm not sure, but, you know. And it was Mary. And as soon as I heard her voice, my whole sense of things shifted. And then we were sort of, you know, catching up, and as we moved along and we're talking, and I heard the anticipation in her voice, and I thought, there's no way I can't go. I have to go. So here I am. And I have to say, I told them, I said, you know, the month before that is going to be crazy for me. I'm going to be giving a big engagement party for my daughter who's just got engaged, and then I'm going to be going to Durango, Colorado to scope out where she wants to get married. And then I'm going to come back and I'm going to have 24 hours and I'm going to get on a plane and I'm going to come. So you guys are just going to have to pray that I have something to say after all of that. So I hope that I have something to say tonight to you and through this weekend. I'm delighted to be with you. It's such a remarkable miracle to be with you and to know your desire, and what an accomplished and wonderful group of people you really are. So I will make my offering and hope that God will take it and multiply it to you and to your benefit. I do want to tell the story of Companions because it's also one of those things that came really as a gift. And there are parts of it that are my story that I probably need to share with you, but very soon my story became our story. And I think one of the things that we've recognized more than anything in being in community together is that it never really is my story. And you all have confirmed that tonight by all the ways that, you know, in retrospect often, we get to recognize how the threads have been woven together. And there's wonderful people here that I have other relationships with who have influenced me through mutual friends and different ways. And it's just a delight to recognize that. So I come alone, and I wish that I had not, because I would love for you to be able to meet the other wonderful people who've been a part of this ongoing experience that has been centered at La Cunada Presbyterian Church. I would love for you to be able to meet them, but it would also be much more representative in a sense of who we are. But I come with the responsibility to share on all of our behalf what our experience has been. I want to read two other passages from Scripture, just as I begin, that have been really pivotal for me in this whole journey of being invited, really, myself into the experience of companions and into the experience of learning as we went more and more about what this reality that we were together experiencing was all about. So I can share with you many things in retrospect, but what, again, I want to say is that much of this was learned along the way. But I'll start out just by reading this passage from Ephesians, which is one of Paul's prayers, and it's familiar to all of you. But he says, "For this reason I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, and you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have the strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and the length and the height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God." I know the first time I really read that passage and thought about what it meant, what I really wondered and began to pray about was, what would the church look like if this was the kind of prayer that we all prayed for one another all the time and every day? And it's with this kind of expectation that we came to our times together. And we really believed that God wanted to fill us with all the fullness of God. What would the church be like then? And then another passage that really has, I think, probably become the passage that speaks to me most profoundly of my own ministry. This is the story of Jesus healing Bartimaeus, that Sally referred to, or Jen referred to this evening already. It says, "And they came to Jericho, and as Jesus was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a great crowd, Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, 'Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me.' And many rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more, 'Son of David, have mercy on me.' And Jesus stopped." In some of the other translations in the NRSV, it says, "Jesus was still and said, 'Call him.' And they called the blind man, saying to him, 'Take heart. Get up, he is calling you.' And throwing off his cloak, Bartimaeus sprang up and came to Jesus, and Jesus said to him, 'What do you want me to do for you?' And the blind man said to him, "Rabbi, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Go your way. Your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on the way. There's a lot of things in this passage for me. And as I keep praying it over the years that I've been in ministry, it's spoken to me and still speaks to me in many different ways. But I think one of the primary initial pieces of this for me was just what it had to say for me about community. There were voices in Bartimaeus' experience who rebuked him. And we all experience those voices in our world and interiorly in ourselves, those negative voices that drag us down, push us away, take us away from, you know, the good, the best, the promise of God. And yet at the same time, there are those who called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up. Jesus is calling you." And what I knew about this passage was I wanted to be a part of a community like that, that said in the midst of all the negative, destructive voices, "Take heart, take heart. Jesus is calling you. Jesus is calling you to himself. Jesus is calling you to community, to belonging." I love that word. Jesus is calling you to purpose. Jesus is calling you to joy. So many of the words that you all expressed this evening in your longings. And Jesus is calling you to the way with others, to be together. And so those two pieces have been sort of my images of what discernment in community is about, is sorting through those voices and really being able to listen to those that represent God and to God's voice in particular, and in particular through the scripture, as well as an invitation to encouragement and caring and sharing and finding vocation, that each one of us has a vocation and a purpose in a way that we particularly and uniquely reflect who God is. And then a calling into the stillness of Jesus. Now, in that sense, this scripture found me. I didn't find it. I wasn't looking for a scripture that talked about silence. And this was a ways into my experience of silence. But I actually was using the scripture to talk about community one day and using it as a Lexio passage and praying it along with the community that I was guiding. And I found myself drawn into the stillness of Jesus in that moment. And I thought, my goodness, I've never really paid as much attention to that part of the passage. I've been so focused, you know, on the other pieces. And I just felt myself held in that stillness before Jesus chose to act. And I thought, this is really a contemplative reality that I'm being drawn into with Jesus. And I'm believing in this moment, as I'm being drawn to the scripture, into this experience, that that is the experience that Jesus had in that moment. That Jesus was able to be in the stillness. How many seconds? I don't know. How long did that moment, you know, last for him? I can't say. But that somehow there was that moment of presence to the Father, presence to himself, presence to the situation and to the opportunity and to his own giftedness and mission that led in to the action that he took. And it all came together for me in that moment. And so those two things, in different ways over the years, have grown in me, have been a part of my longing and my desire, that has been a part of at least my participation and my contribution to what Companions became at La Cañada. I'll go back just a minute in terms of this. We started Companions in 1996, and it was after I had been trained as a spiritual director at Chelaine Institute, which is here. I think it probably, it's ecumenical. They would not self-identify as evangelical by any means. And in fact, many of us who are evangelicals who've gone through the training have felt like evangelicals kind of got short shrift in the past. But nevertheless, it was a foundational experience for me. And I have to tell you, having said that they would not self-identify as evangelicals, and there would be many ways in which I could possibly disagree with them theologically, Rosemary Doherty, who wrote the book on group spiritual direction, did probably the finest lecture on conversion that I have ever heard, and I have heard some fine evangelical preachers in my day address that topic. So there were many ways in which I felt a commonality and a sense of, being a part of what was going on there. But they do have the distinction, probably, of being the community that trains spiritual directors to a distilled expression of contemplative direction. And it did provide a foundation for me in those early years for my understanding. It was right about a little earlier than that, but kind of in that whole period of time that I was working at Fuller Seminary and had been asked to do spiritual direction with students there. And so when I first became a spiritual director, I was working with seminary students primarily. And this was after time spent with, never as paid professional staff, but always as a volunteer, both with Young Life and with InterVarsity, and realizing that in small groups, people really grow in faith, and that to be in a small group and to encourage faith was where I wanted to be, that my gifting and my desire was really to do that. So I had done a lot of work in small groups, both through those organizations and then in the local church, and I had been looking at all the different resources that were available and was really getting to the point where I thought, you know, the kind of stuff that I really want isn't here. Now, some of you aren't quite so old as me, as I. This was back in the late 70s and early 80s. And a guy named Larry Richards had written some good stuff, and there was Max Denham had already produced some materials for the Methodist Church that really drew on the classical spiritual tradition. But it wasn't, you know, as common in evangelical circles as it at least is becoming now. And I was not familiar with very many resources. And so when I got introduced to spiritual direction and found out there was this whole historical body of writing and practice that related to encouraging people to grow in faith, and in particular, to grow in their experience of prayer. I mean, I was ecstatic. I was just thrilled. And so I started reading everything I could get my hands on. And I had a book probably in one hand and the Bible in the other and a student in front of me in those years. And I was trying to put into practice and express, and was growing myself in many ways, and just delighting in the new ways that I was beginning to think about spiritual direction. So small groups, spiritual direction, ended up going on a retreat that was being held at a Benedictine abbey that is close to us. And I had been in the silence before. I made my first silent retreat when I was 16. I grew up in the Episcopal Church. Actually, I believe came to a knowledge of the living God through the sacraments, and then was provided with language and a biblical foundation for that through ministries like Young Life and InterVarsity. But really had both of those experiences, moving forward. And just lost my train of thought slightly.
Benedictine Abbey,
thank you. Taking that experience of silence, ended up at the Benedictine Abbey with a good friend of Pam's.
Ann Anderson,
that's right. And learned to do Lectio. And Lectio, I can't say it any less dramatically. Lectio really changed my prayer. It met me in so many different ways. And the group experience was a lot of what changed me. Those of you who have any familiarity with the Myers-Briggs or the temperament typology that is embodied in that. An INTJ is an introvert, an intuitive, a thinker, and a person who does value closure. And I am an INTJ. 2% of the population is INTJ, and of that 2%, I think that still holds true, very few are women. But it means that I was not very image-oriented, and not necessarily particularly feeling-oriented often. Principles were really important to me. Truth. I mean, Francis Schaeffer just really met me where I was when I was in college. And I was really glad to find out you could be a Christian and think. Lectio led me into a different experience. And by being with other people who were different types, who did, feel comfortable with images, who did feel more comfortable, with feelings, and who responded that way to the scripture, began to inform my prayer. And I began to experience not only the shaping that came from that, but the contribution that their prayer became my prayer. And I began to discover something about spiritual community. Because in the process that I was introduced to, we would read the scripture aloud. You would initially share the word or the phrase that stood out. So I would share my word or phrase, but all around the circle, I would hear different words or phrases. And then you would read the scripture again. And I would, struggle a little bit to figure out, I get senses. I would get a sense, but usually not an image or a feeling. Sometimes a physical sort of response, a visceral response. But then I would hear around the circle other people with, brilliant, images. And as I went back into the silence, other people's words, other people's images, the emotion that had come to them became a part of my prayer. And I realized that I could pray in community, and as a result of the scripture through this process, in a way that I never had been able to pray on my own. And I was so benefited and so enriched and so aware that I didn't have to do this all by myself. That the very things that were, I could begin to experience as deficits, were I to think I was just on my own journey, I began to experience as invitations for others to be included, for me to receive the offerings of the people with whom I was in community. And so that really did have a big impact on my understanding of what it means to be in community. And then here we were in the silence, experiencing all the ways that in the silence you're able to relate with one another and experience a depth of community often in the wordlessness that you don't experience any other way. An awareness that you don't experience in any other way. And I'll just tell you a funny story. And Anne would laugh at this if you reminded her of it. One of the things about the silent retreat was I got to the point where I was leading it all the time. And I love to experiment and do, you know, wonderful different things. And so I decided we were going to do a pilgrimage out to the place that we were going to have Eucharist at the end of one of the weekends that we were on. And so we all got together, and I had scouted out a place by the river that we were going to go and do this wonderful liturgy. And I had this, you know, group of 45 people who was following, you know, behind me. And I got out sort of in the desert. This is in the desert. And I couldn't find my place. And I was lost. I thought, oh my gosh, here I am leading all these people, and I don't know where I'm going. So we laughed about that. We did finally find our way, with a little help from my friends, to the place where we were meant to do this. But that was, you know, again, a pivotal experience. Again, my deficits don't have to be what define me. Mm-hmm. They are, in fact, what bring me closer into community, and I don't have to be everything to everyone. So small groups, spiritual direction, experience of silence, getting introduced to the Benedictine tradition and Lectio, and a whole new way of experiencing scripture. All those things were really important to me. I started experimenting more with group direction, and this was before Rosemary had published her book, or there was much out there. And honestly, her book is still one of the few things, a few resources out there on group direction. It's still not the mainstream in terms of spiritual direction. Individual direction is still kind of the dominant form of direction. And so when I'm in groups of spiritual directors, one of the things I say is, one of the things perhaps that distinguishes my sense of call is that I feel most called to group direction and to group direction in the context of a larger community. So companions, again, part of what in me developed into the way that the whole experience got structured was my sense that not only could you be in a small group and do mutual direction, mutual encouragement in faith and in prayer, but that you could recognize and participate as a community of small groups, that you belonged to something bigger than the immediate small group that you were in. And one of the things that I had struggled with a lot in doing small groups was how often people got invested in the way things were doing and in their own experience and in the wonderful things that were happening and in how close they were, but they had a hard time seeing beyond. You know, what are we being called to outside of this wonderful experience that we're having together? How do we support one another and understand that we're community without thinking we all have to do the same thing? Those of you that know anything about the Sojourners community, that was another piece that came into this for me. And they really developed early on the idea of mission groups. And the groups existed both to nurture the members spiritually, but also to share a call to a particular kind of ministry or mission. And I really believe in that model still, but also have a sense that we share mission and ministry in some ways simply by being community together. We don't all have to be doing the same thing. If what we are doing is what we bring back to the group and acknowledge to be a part of what we need support and assistance and direction about. So in Companions, there was and always has been an emphasis on finding your calling, finding, first of all, your identity, and someone used that word, in the sense of your unique way of being and reflecting God in the world, and finding your calling and knowing that both those things were a part of your membership in the group and what was to be encouraged in the group and what was to be shared about and out of in the groups. The attempt to be in the larger community and to continue to encourage and focus and teach about all of that as well. So that the community, by being itself, became a community of reference, of discernment, and in a sense, a model for the rest of the church, as well as, hopefully, in some senses, for the neighborhood, the community in which it was located, and constantly trying to help people go from the personal experience of God and all that they could learn and all the ways that they could be encouraged in that through to the experience of the small group and what it was like to be used in a small group to encourage someone else as well as to receive what was being offered out to the larger community where you recognized that we live in circles of community and we have a responsibility in enlarging circles of community as Christians. And ultimately, we are called to be on behalf of the world. So if I had to tell you in just a very few words what I understand Companions, which is the word we use, and I love journey mates. I think it's a great way to refer to it. But if I had to tell you what Companions is about, it's being with God, and I have this written down, with God for one another on behalf of the world. With God for one another on behalf of the world. I like to call this living prepositionally. So I haven't told you concretely. All these experiences in my own life brought me to the point where at a moment in time, at La Cañada Presbyterian Church, as a result of some very interesting sort of fluky realities, we had a interim minister of adult formation named Ron White. Some of you may have heard of Ron. He's written some wonderful books on Lincoln. And he knew Ben Campbell Johnson, who was teaching at Columbia, and had sort of started moving out of a more evangelistic focus into spirituality. And spirituality was the new thing at that point. And as a part of Ben's own cutting edge, Ben ended up at a conference with Rosemary Doherty that was 3 days long, never had experienced group direction in his life, absolutely loved what he experienced. Ron had invited him to come to La Cañada Press, so he showed up the next weekend at La Cañada, and he decided, because he'd had such a good time with Rosemary, that he would do the same workshop at our church, having never done any of this before in his life. He had a lot of
confidence. But we responded really well. He got a turnout of about 50 people, and he went through, you know, and used Rosemary's stuff and led us through the whole thing. And of course, this was familiar to me, so I was sitting back watching all of this going on. And people were hungry. People loved it. And so Judy was, Ron had left, and Judy Durf had become our new Minister of Spiritual Formation, and she was in her first year, and she said, we have to do something. Ben's here, people are excited, we have to start this, and we can't wait till next year. We have to start it next month. I said, she was talking to me knowing that I had, you know, some training, and I said, oh my gosh, next month, I mean, you know, I'd really like to have a year where we can, you know, train facilitators and, you know, get our act together and write some material. And no, we can't wait that long. So I got her to wait a few months. I think Ben was there in maybe October or November, and we started, I don't think it was January. I think it was a little bit after that. I think it might have been April that we started, but I'm not even sure. It might have been January. And so we, in many ways, created this experience as we went along, but it was such an amazing opportunity, and we laughed having prayed the scripture where Peter jumps out of the boat, you know, into the water, that Ben actually pushed Judy and I into the water. And she did things that I couldn't have done. She is an amazing administrator. And she, you know, had the position at the church and was able to pull a lot of resources together. She's a very gifted leader. And so we pooled our shared giftedness and resources. And we drew on that silent retreat community. Most of our facilitators came out of the community of people who had been regularly going to the Abbey at Vallermo. And therefore, not all of them had experienced Lexio, because we hadn't been doing that as part of the silent retreat. I'd experienced that at a workshop. But they were used to the silence. And many of them had done their own inner work, often in therapy. We knew that they knew how to separate their own stuff from somebody else's stuff. And had been on a spiritual journey. Many of them leaders in the church, some of them elders at the time, many of them elders after the fact, small group leaders in different ministries in different ways. So God really drew a group of remarkable people, Ann Anderson, Pam's friend, being one of them. And I want to just say one more thing about Ann, because one of the precursors to all of this, 10 years prior to Ben arriving on the scene, Anne, who was a good friend at the time and a little bit older than I, but and very different from me in temperament, came to me and said, Lisa, I'd like you to lead a small group for me. I've invited some of my closest friends, and we want to meet for a whole day once a month, and we want you to come and be the leader. And we want you to share with us some of the things you're learning, and just, you know, we're ready. We're ready for an adventure, and we're willing to let you do anything you want with us. Man, were they my laboratory. I had the most fun, and they were most willing and open, and we did everything from washing one another's feet to, you know, reading books that they said they loved to reading books that they said they hated, to, you know, doing what the Catholic Church would call a paraliturgy, different kinds of liturgy and prayer, and every new thing I was learning I tried out on them. And they were wonderful. They gave me really honest feedback. There were times when Anne said, I'm never going to do that again. Sometimes she relented, sometimes she didn't. But by the time I got to, you know, putting together companions and thinking, oh, I can guide a whole group of people in guiding a whole nother group of people. I had 10 years of leading these day retreats and a little bit of additional experience in addition to other things that I'd done doing retreat work. So we dove in, and
Companions is still going. We started in, I think I probably said in 1996. And I am no longer integrally involved. When I was diagnosed with cancer and went through a stem cell transplant, I stepped back totally from every ministry that I was doing. And had already become, I was still supervising Companions, but had become very involved in writing a curriculum for training spiritual directors, so I had been focusing on that for about a year prior. But we've had facilitators who have become directors and have continued to have probably 40 to 60 people each year involved in the ministry. So there's been a lot of people over this length of time, 15 years I guess it is, who have been involved with us in ministry and in this particular way of being with God. And some lovely things have flowed out of it. I would have to say that probably